I guess we'll go ahead and get started then. So, my name's CJ Myhill. I'm an attorney here in Atlanta. I'm primarily a litigator. Came from a solely business litigation firm, but I've, in the last year, gone out and started my own practice. So now I'm a little more general, but have dealt with IP issues my entire career. Have dealt with the DMCA from the legal perspective. So I'm here to give the legal side of the discussion.
Yeah, my name is Daniel Baker. I've been a system administrator, Usenet administrator for over a decade now, and I had the privilege of working for a company that helped to make some of the case law that when we were sued at Remark.com, ALS versus Remark, set some of the case law regarding the DMCA as it relates to the internet and how ISPs deal with it and what has to be identified. And I also work closely with lawyers on that. I've been giving talks here for a number of years now, so I'm more the technical and the ISP side of all of this to balance out the legal side.
Best of both worlds. So we generally like to run this as a discussion. We'll be glad to share with you our knowledge and our experiences, but if at any point you have questions and you want to jump in. Don't feel like you need to wait for us to stop talking at the end. You'll get your 5 minutes. Just come on in and let's have a discussion about the DMCA and the various issues. I guess where we ought to start is the basic background. What is the DMCA? What is the safe harbor provisions we'll be discussing? DMCA stands for the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and it was an addition to the Copyright Act of 1976 because, as you can imagine, in 1976, some of these issues weren't really top of anyone's mind. So they added some provisions to the Copyright Act to take into account things that went beyond books and movies and sound recordings. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act is not all electronic or internet-based. In fact, it contains provisions for protection of the design of boat hulls, but we won't be talking about that. If you have a boat hull and you really want to talk to me about it, I'll give you a card, but it's not that fascinating a discussion. But what is more animated of a discussion is the safe harbor provisions for ISPs. That's really what we're going to be focusing our talk on here today. The DMCA has a process which allows an ISP, and in the definitions of the legal sense of the term, an ISP is really anyone who has a space where other users can generate content. You're not dealing with just, we don't mean Comcast. We do, because Comcast obviously is covered by the law. But I also mean your blog, or your photo site, or anything you have that you let other people put content on. And the reason we have a law about that is that when people put content on there, that content could infringe. Without the safe harbor provisions, which we'll discuss, without those provisions, you are also infringing. You're publishing that infringing statement, that infringing work, that whatever it is. And that being the case, you are also subject to being sued by the copyright owner. And that's not good. Just, you don't want that. So what the safe harbor provision does is it allows you a shield to those suits. You say, I didn't put that up there, someone else put that up there, and I'm going to take it down, and I am protected. Once I've received a notice that you have a copyright issue, I take the copyrighted work down, I am protected. You can't sue me. You can still sue the guy who put it up there if you can find him and you want to do that, but you can't sue me. And that is an invaluable shield for people who have these issues arise. And obviously it comes up a lot more the larger you are, the more people you have posting content on your site. Just think of something like CNN. CNN has, I don't even know how many users put comments or any other things, you know, in relation to the news, ads, pictures, spam, everything that comes up there. All of that would be CNN's problem if not for this shield. And so CNN wouldn't let you put it there. The reality is that without the safe harbor provisions, we wouldn't have the web as we know it. Mm-hmm. Because no content provider, no ISP would allow user-generated content. You wouldn't have Facebook. You wouldn't have YouTube. You wouldn't have Twitter. You wouldn't have any of the things that, you know, that we rely on now, MySpace, anything. Because the moment someone puts something infringing on there, and I mean, I know it would come as a surprise that there may be something infringing on YouTube. But let's just pretend that somewhere, some wacky guy might put something infringing on YouTube. YouTube would get sued. And when Sony or Warner Brothers or Universal or the RIAA or whoever comes around and sues YouTube, YouTube goes away. Enough lawsuits, and they're out of business. So without the protection of the safe harbor provision, those sites wouldn't exist, or at least not for very long.
I have a quick comment. The flip side of that is then the ISPs become essentially the copyright cops.
Well, no, not so much.
They have to police their own content now rather than an enforcing agency.
From my perspective here, I handled the DMCA complaints that were sent to supernews.com for many years. And this actually, from my point of view, you know, I know that there are definitely some things in the DMCA that are bad, the reverse engineering and all that. But from as far as safe harbor goes, from an ISP's point of view, this was a godsend. Because otherwise, when ALS sued remark.com, it would have just been, it would have been flat out that we were contributory infringers. There would have been nothing to shield us. We wouldn't have had anything to go back and say, but we didn't put this here on our free website for everybody to see, you know. Instead, we would have just been sued into oblivion because we're the ones with the money, and it's a per infringement, you know, mandatory, what is it, 250,000?
If there are statutory damages available, which there often are, it can be anywhere from $30,000 to $150,000 per infringement.
Yeah, it's crazy. And that adds up very quickly if somebody were to post, ALS was an adult website, and the news group that they were interested in having removed from our web-based newsreader was, probably had thousands of pictures in there, some of which were probably theirs, and they expected us to go and remove all of them based on they had a website with headshots of all their models. So they expected, this is how it became more specific as to what we needed to do. And this is when you're talking about it's awful. Legally required.
How do I get your job?
I'll switch the paycheck. Yeah, I told you about the hassle we get. So as far as becoming the copyright cops, the remark case was they sent us a notice, and it was in the heady days of the dot-com boom before the bust, and nobody knew there was no case law. The DMCA was something that, you know, the lawyers that had founded the company had surely heard of, and our, you know, all that, but nobody was really paying attention. We had this web thing to do, and, you know, it was going to make us millions, and so nobody paid attention to these takedowns that came through, and whether or not they were really, you know, accurate or whatever, they were not properly handled, and they did not go to me at the time. It went to somebody else, and these came through, and we thought that, I think that what was considered there was, you didn't tell us everyone to take down, and that was part of our defense, was that we needed everyone, you need to go through and look at this and identify your material and tell us what to remove, because it is too much of a burden on us to go through this whole news group and know who all your models are and all of this and identify all the works. Just one sec. And so the case went through, and it was originally thrown out, and then they appealed, or we won a bit, and then it ended up sort of split, and they got some money, and they companies only have to substantially identify the amount, you know, what is there. They don't have to give everything technically. You know, so if there are a million message IDs on Usenet, you know, that infringe on your work because it was a movie and split up a bunch or whatever, then technically, you know, you don't have to give all of them. You have to give enough information that the ISP can find that and then do the work. But they did not have to say, hey, you've got JAWS on your server. Get it down. And then we're stuck with, where? We could guess, but we would rather not guess. We have ones and zeros on our server, you know? So if we aren't in that position, it actually gives us leverage back where we have to get certain information from them. And it also, you know, it gives us something that we can turn around and say, hey, you didn't give us enough information. And we have a way to negotiate. We have some leverage, which we did not have before. All we had was lawyers before immediately getting involved. It couldn't go to anybody else. So.
I think this is a good example of how it works. My wife puts things up on Zazzle all the time and sells T-shirts. She's got a picture of a red 55 Chevy. She's got a release from the owner. She's had the thing up there, sells 20, 30 T-shirts a month. It's great. All of a sudden, it disappeared. She calls Zazzle, and they said, well, somebody said that's his copyrighted picture, and... So we took your picture down. So she faxed them the release from the guy along with a picture of the picture, and it went back up the next day.
Yeah, technically how it's supposed to work, and especially in a case where the person who is supposedly infringing can be identified, such as you have your wife would have a business relationship with Zazzle. If we received a takedown for somebody's work, we would have to take it down immediately. But the other half of this is that the law says we need to then notify that user to the best of our ability that we have taken this down, that we received this, and give them a warning, because there's supposedly a three strikes, you know, or a multiple repeat infringers are not supposed to be allowed to stick around. You know, after a while, we're supposed to try and clear them out. One back there, just and so.
And so, therefore, they
should notify her, and then she can turn around and file a counter notice. They may have their own requirements about wanting the release and everything, but technically all she has to do is say, no, this is mine. Here is all of my contact information. Basically, what she's doing is she's anteing up and saying, here's how you contact me. I have a sworn statement saying this is not infringing. I do have the right to use this. And the company has to put it back within a very short period. And then Zazzle would notify whomever sent them the original takedown. And they would have 10 days? It's either 10 or 14.
I think it's 10. But
yeah, it's like 10 to 14
left my
days.
Nose at home.
Yeah, to turn around and sue your wife. To actually, right. They would have to take it to court.
Otherwise,
they drop it. It's done. Mm. So anything Zazzle says about releases, really most of the places I've seen would like you to upload a release if they really want a CYA for themselves. But yeah.
So. Yeah, or she might have just sent the release, you know, as good. But once you go through the putback process, the contact information is again, the ISP is essentially stepping back at that point. It's just putting the right parties in contact with each other. Mm-hmm. If a lawsuit happens, a lawsuit happens, but the lawsuit will not happen over the ISP. And if at that point the content owner wants to get it taken back down again, they've got to file that suit, and they've got to go into the judge and get an injunction. Mm-hmm. to get that content taken back down.
Yeah.
So it's not the shield of the ISP. Let's just go back to the first question too. The shield of the ISP is when the fight starts, when someone says that's my stuff and someone put it up there. There is no requirement whatsoever under the law that an ISP police its own site. There is absolutely no requirement that even if you have a small photo site and you get 10 comments a day, you have no requirement to go in there and read those 10 and make sure none of them are infringing. You have you are free and clear until you get a takedown notice. And once you get a properly formatted, complete takedown notice, well, then you have to act to police your site, but you have all the information necessary in that detailed takedown notice.
Yeah.
Detailed enough, anyway.
Yeah. So.
Okay, I had a quick question for you regarding that, and that's if you do have within the original DMCA notification, the complainant has to sign a good faith agreement, mm-hmm. or a statement rather, that exactly. this is their material and that they do believe yeah. that it is infringing on their rights.
Exactly.
Now, if there was an instance such as this, where it is obvious that it is not actually the owner of the property that is being infringed, mm-hmm. I mean that they do have the permissions, and it was taken down, do they have the opportunity to go back and countersue due to damages
See,
done?
Well, I think that. Well, this is America. You could sue for anything.
Yes.
You've got all the. You should have received and just to go ahead and use your wife as an example. technically,
thank you.
He should have. Yeah, he should have, or she should have received a copy of who sent the takedown. So now all that content, all that contact information, and the sworn statement under penalty of perjury, which is the language used in most of these, saying that this is their stuff, they have the right to police it like this, would have ended up with her. And so she's got their contact information. She would still need to ideally send back the counter notice, and then she could pursue it there, especially if they became, I don't know if you'd, if for just one, you'd probably just let it go by, but if you started, if somebody was actually harassing you, you would, in my position, I would talk to the ISP and say, hey, look, these are bogus. Can't you do anything? And the ISP is in an awkward position there, because technically they get a DMCA takedown, even if it's... because I work for one of these companies, and even if it's wrong on its face, so long as all the pieces are there, but, in truth, if there's something that we could find, wrong with it to send back, that it didn't have all the pieces quite right, we could punt it back. But I haven't seen much abuse. I know that it can be abused. You can use this as a way to, shut somebody down, to mm-hmm. attack somebody's content. So was there a particular aspect to that, or...
Well, not that in particular, but although one of the things that you said did kind of strike me as you were talking, and that's in regards to the time frame for this. I've worked for a couple of different web hosting companies, and uh-huh. I've done DMCA complaints handling that for both of them. I've worked on the abuse team for the one and the other. Well, it's small, so it's all kind of falling into the same place.
Right.
And in both of the companies that I've worked for, we do tend to give our customers a bit of a break. We let them know that there was a complaint that came out, but we do not remove the content immediately. I mean, we typically give them 24 to 48 hours. I mean, as far as I was aware, if we give them that time, we still are under the protection as long as we address it within a reasonable time frame.
The law doesn't give the exact time frame, which mm-hmm. is, it doesn't actually say, it basically says in a reasonable time. Which at the company that I work for now, one of the issues that we're dealing with, and I no longer mm-hmm. handle the takedowns, and I'm glad because we get, because of the nature of Usenet, and that it's not like a URL where you have a page and then all the different content you have on Usenet, you have message IDs, and one big thing could be broken up into literally, tens of thousands of little things. So we get millions of message IDs in these takedowns from big companies, and, MPAA, RIA, the BSA, software associations, and they are right now running a huge batch that's like, well, we hope that they'll be done in 8 days, because 7 days is really what we like to think of as a reasonable time, the farthest extent of reasonable time. And back at the previous company that I worked for, when I was the one in charge of it, I wouldn't want it to go past 3 days, and that would be, and that would include the weekend. I telecommuted, so I would go in there and say, oh, look, we had a takedown, and process it, and it'd be done. But giving them 24 to 48 hours to respond and to send back a counter notice doesn't seem to me to be excessive. I would most places err on the side of take it down, mm-hmm. make it where you can have a mechanism where you can turn off their content and turn it back on so they don't have to put it back up. But otherwise,
right. The problem you run into there is that you're walking a tightrope. You're running a very risky game to benefit your user, but could potentially open yourself up to a significant amount of liability if you go outside that reasonable time frame. Or if the thing is, the protection works both ways. You're protected against a takedown too. If you take someone's content down because you received a notice, you're not liable for that time down. Can they sue the person who made the improper claim? Could his wife say, my shirt was off the site for 4 days, and in that 4 days, I sell 100 t-shirts a day. That's 400 lost shirts. Mm-hmm. I have some significant damages. I would bring a suit because I have some significant damages. If the picture of my kids went down for 3 days and grandma didn't get to see it, I don't really have any damages.
I don't know about that.
Well, good point. but no legal damages anyway. So whether I bring the suit or not, the fact is that if I've been harmed by your actions, I have a remedy. Mm-hmm. But where you want to be is behind the shield. You know, if you get a takedown that you think is shoddy or improper, send it back. Mm-hmm. But if you get a proper, correctly filled out, sworn statement takedown, mm-hmm. your much better avenue is to take it down. Notify the user as quickly as possible, give them the right to put to give you the put back, and put it back as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, make the content as accessible as possible mm-hmm. in the takedown process. Yeah. I think you're still going to get the goodwill of your posters, but you're not going to leave yourself open to the liability the way you might if that content stays up. I mean, if you go 2 or 3 days out, is that a reasonable time? You don't want to have the fight before a judge on what's reasonable. Because yeah, that's where you are if it doesn't come down.
Since there hasn't been any case law that I'm aware of that is on that aspect of it. I mean, there's the Harlan Ellison versus AOL, where AOL said, well, we never got it. And they were right. They never got it because their abuse address went to Davinol. You know, it's and you know what they found out? That isn't a defense. You know, that your mail doesn't, you're not answering your mail. Mm-hmm. It doesn't count. But I don't think there's anything that is set to the time period.
Making
it easier, having a web form so it's easier for them, directing them to the Chilling Effects website, the EFF website about the DMCA, which has I think it's a putback generator.
Yeah, literally fill in the blank.
Exactly. It makes it very easy for them to do this. You know, and this is something that at our company, the lawyers didn't want to go out on a limb and have us tell people how to send a putback, which I felt was... We really tried to run a more technical shop than a lawyery or marketing-y shop, but, you know, when the lawyers speak, we don't have much say. So we did not include that. And if somebody wrote back and said, well, what do I do about this, then I might send them back a non-legal write-up and say, why don't you go here?
So. I'm kind of curious, if a case like this goes to court, does the content stay up or does it come down for the duration of the proceedings?
Was there a putback? If there was a putback, the content stays up. Because once the putback comes in, as an ISP, I have to comply with that too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in order to keep the shield, which you absolutely want to do,
yeah.
In order to keep the shield, I've got to comply with the law. And the law says if I get a putback, put it back. Mm-hmm. You've got the information. You say he's infringing. I say, well, here's his card. Mm-hmm. Call him. And you have a certain amount of time to lawyer up and go sue him. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, the first thing your smart lawyer is going to do, if you hire me, but the first thing a lawyer is going to do is put in a preliminary injunction to take that down during the pendency of litigation. Mm-hmm. While we're fighting over who owns it and whether it ought to be up or down, it'll be down by judicial fiat rather than by ISP action.
Yeah, I think that many ISPs may err on the side of feeling shielded, you know, that lawyers are, you know, no offense, risk averse, you know, I think it's a term, and they're not going to tell you, oh, no, you can, you know, fly by the seat of your pants and do this. They may say, well, why don't you just go ahead? You can't be too wrong in taking it down again if they hear about the lawsuit. But I can't remember exactly what the law says. I've got a copy of it here, but...
Right.
Skimming over it while I'm doing this.
Right, again, I don't have my notes in front of me, so I hope there's nothing in there that says the exact opposite of what I just said.
And then,
but the general rule is, you're right, can you take it down? You can, but then you leave yourself potentially open to problems from, I mean, his wife is making, has a business selling this product. If that product ain't there, it ain't selling. Mm-hmm. And there's some significant harm that can happen unless there is a judicial statement saying it's coming down during the pendency of this litigation, and any harm will be assessed through this judicial process. The lawsuit's already there. The lawsuit's already filed.
Then also, so it's been said, this does cover all forms of infringement, including derivative works and, you know, et cetera.
Anything that would be covered by copyright. It's sort of an interesting question what the trademark holder does.
Yeah, that's a lot of people are confused about trademark versus copyright as well, and you know we would get mistaken takedown notices, you know, that were for, it's like, well, this is, they're talking about your trademark, you know, somebody talked about your company and mentioned your trademark, you can't send us a takedown for this,
right.
And in which case we're not going to remove the thing because this really is on its face wrong, you know. This much we can determine it without being lawyers and feel pretty confident, but you know, we'd probably let our lawyers know, at least at the corporation that I worked for before. So she's got the mic there.
Yeah,
so.
I'm a reseller for and use SiteGround as the ISP, and I'm just me, and all this legal stuff is like, I'm just learning about it now. I just host sites that I built.
Mm-hmm.
And what if one of them has 7,000 users and I have no idea what's being posted? They have this humongous forum.
Mm-hmm.
Am I responsible for that forum, or I built the site, so I have the relationship with the owner of the site.
How far up the stream do you want to go?
That's what I'm asking, and then I have another question. I'll just wait till your answer.
A quick thing that I would toss in is that they should probably have, if they are allowing people to post content on what is really their site, you built it for them, you may provide the hosting, but ideally they should have filed with the Copyright Office and have a DMCA contact on file. And they should have a statement on their website that says this is, you know, for probably a statement that their users before signing up, you know, or when they're doing things, say, hey, you know, this is how it works. But if you look around, look on any big site, and they'll have a notice.
This guy is like a farrier, and all the guys on are farriers. He's been doing this for 10 years, and all of a sudden, there's all this legalism stuff that
it's,
he has to
It's work. Been around for a while. It's just, now you know.
if he has users and users post content, he wants to have a DMCA contact.
All right.
Because if not, he is not protected.
I see.
The ISP definition, from a legal perspective, is he an ISP? Yes. Are you the ISP? Yes.
Huh.
Is whoever is providing your network? Yes. Everybody up the chain is the ISP. Now the question is, who am I going to contact when I want that content taken down?
Yeah.
You know, if I see there's a picture on a site and I know that's my picture, I took that picture, it's hanging on my wall, it's copyrighted, I've done everything, I could conceivably go all the way up to Comcast and call them, but they're not the most efficient source of getting that taken down.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go first to the guy whose site is actually posting the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And that being the case, you probably are not going to get the takedown notices. At the same time, you probably ought to have a takedown contact, and you probably ought to have that protection. If you get a notice, comply with it. If you don't get a notice, then you don't have to do anything.
I've just been complying when I get something, I contact my user. But then my other question is related to this gentleman's. I'm helping to market a film, small film for Ben Browder, called Freeze Frame, and Jonas McCord is the producer. He shot a test scene, put it up on YouTube, went to Burl Ives Estate, and got permission to do Holly Jolly Christmas, and YouTube took Holly Dolly Christmas off the site, and Jonas has now got a lawyer up, but
he should be able to send a putback and not have to worry about it.
Well, he hasn't been able to.
Let me just ask this question: Did they take it down in response to a takedown notice from someone?
We don't know.
Or did they just say, "Oh, wait, I saw that, and now I know it's..." Because one of the things that
we
you
don't
have...
We don't know. That's what's so weird.
Right. One of the things that is a risk as an ISP is when you do start policing your own content. Because generally, the reason this safe harbor is there, the purpose for the safe harbor is because...
Two in the back.
The ISP doesn't necessarily know what was put on the site. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the content on YouTube, even if I'm the owner of YouTube, because mm-hmm. it just doesn't, there's no possible way to know that.
Yeah.
I don't even know all the content that's on, you know, any small site. So the assumption is you're protected, you have a defense, because you didn't know that you were contributorily infringing the copyright. Mm-hmm. Now, if you know, if you see it, and you let it go, well, then you actually had knowledge and you did let it go. At the same time, if you make a bunch of efforts to police your own work, then you're also showing that you should have known about all these other things and maybe take them down. So it's a risky game to say, do I take things down on my own absent a takedown notice? At the same time, if there's something that's blatantly, obviously, unquestionably infringing on your site, maybe you don't wait for a takedown notice once you see it.
Well, one other question there, one thing I can bring up is a lot of the takedowns right now are automatically generated, and that causes issues sometimes. Yeah, they will just do keyword check, you know, particularly for Usenet, because they will go through and they'll look for things like a movie name, you know, Jaws, you know, that's pretty unique, right? You know, that couldn't possibly show up any other way. And we had a recent case where somebody had reported, sent in a takedown for Vanilla Sky, the Tom Cruise movie. Yeah, and now that we've figured that
Tom
out.
Cruise.
Yeah, what it turned out to be was a discussion post about a song in like a foreign language MP3 group that just happened to have both the words Vanilla and Sky in the subject line, and yet we got a takedown for it. And, you know, that's just wrong, but no human is looking at this, and obviously no human really thought about what they were doing, because it's, you know, they could have, there were other checks that they could have done, but there's not much, you know, we're talking about, you know, what you could do if somebody sent a bad takedown. There's just not that much that you can do. I mean, what are the users going to claim? You know, best I could do is I could send a putback and be able to post their comment again, because we don't have a mechanism, you know, through at our site anyway, to be able to literally restore that content, but we don't have to be able to, we just have to allow them to again. So now they've had their comment removed. Whereas they do not have really a fiscal harm here, they have no financial damages that they can call back to. So there's no reason for them to be more like that. But for YouTube, it would not surprise me if they had things that were just like, you know, with your cell phone, you can identify a song, you know, just let your dial in and it'll identify. That if they were sitting there, and especially if it were an original version of that they may have algorithms that are going through and looking at signatures based on the actual music playing in there, so that they don't have, what was it, 3-year-old, 5-year-old, whatever, dancing to Prince's music and get sued over that again, you know. And so they may have automated a lot of that thanks to pressure from the RIAA.
You know, interestingly, that same thing, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to
Yeah. Oh, no. So they may not even have a takedown in that. They're doing that because now the RIAA has made it where they've wanted to raise the bar on what knowledge, you know, what their knowledge is. Because they could say, well, we have this vast, the volumes, you know, huge tracts of data, but what are we going to do with this? You know, we can't know everything that's on here, and we can't know all of your songs, and we can't know who is allowed to post the songs, because sometimes copyright owners post stuff to YouTube, you know, and it's on purpose. Yeah, so how do you get around that? You know, the RIAA would say, well, here's access to signatures to all of our library, much like ALS did for us. Here are all our models' faces, you know, but in a more sophisticated manner. And they could say, well, here, you know, if something matches this digital signature, we expect you to go ahead and remove it. But they really should, from, you know, again, going back to being nice to your users, at least trying to keep them in the loop, it's not a DMCA thing. It doesn't require that you notify them, but it'd sure be nice.
Yeah, you know? Your content's gone. It might be nice to know it's gone.
Yeah, yeah. It's the YouTube, and this was the test we wanted to get to see how many people would view and comment so that he would know whether he could raise the money to make a movie, and all of a sudden he goes on one day and the music's gone.
Right. Well, one of the interesting things that came out of that Dancing Baby case kind of ties into the automated takedown notice. What that court decided actually is that is that the content owner, the copyright owner of what's posted, who wants his content taken down, has an affirmative duty to make sure that it's not fair use before you take it down.
Because and thus that it's also the correct thing that they're asking to take down.
Right, and that it's actually, it actually does infringe. Yeah. Because obviously if it doesn't infringe, it shouldn't be taken down. So there's, you have the repeat infringer rule for the people who are actively posting negative things, but as of yet, there's no repeat sort of jackass rule for the guy who's just sending takedown after takedown after takedown after takedown to see if it hits something, or automatically generating something for every time you use the word Jaws. So it's going to be interesting to see if in the wake of that YouTube case, those strategies come under fire from content posters who say, you know, somewhere someone has to send an automatically generated bad faith takedown to someone who has enough money on the other side to take it all the way through an appeals court. So that's the difficulty. But from a legal perspective and from a legal analysis, academically, I think that there's a very good challenge to that practice based on that case and based on now having the duty to make sure that you're really being infringed before you send that takedown.
Well, one quick question for you, and also going back to what you were saying, that you were pointing out the fact that it includes a sworn statement there. Does that give you any leverage as the person, you know, can you bring any sort of case on that? They've committed perjury in sending this.
Yeah.
What would you do with that? I mean, lawyer up and say, hey, they did it.
The same way you would take any perjury case, which is almost nothing ever. But that's the challenge again. I mean, I think that there is absolutely no doubt. You've got damages issues again, but if you can find the right plaintiff, then there's an opportunity to make some significant law and get rid of some of these bad faith takedowns and get rid of really the only avenue of abuse under the law, because the law can be abused. It's just no two ways about it. Any law can be abused, unfortunately. But this one has so many good effects that its one problem is the automatically generated takedown that catches every option of the word Jaws.
Yeah, or someone who does it maliciously.
Right.
You know, or totally, presumably they thought that that was their picture. I mean, 57, 55
right.
Chevy, you know, there have probably been a few of those taken, you know, but as a photographer, you know, that's one of the...
we had a request to take down a infringing material off a Tor exit node, so they obviously didn't do their due diligence.
No.
My question is that I'm a student, and as part of my academic career, I'm helping put together and, of course, host this website that's actually hosted in the school servers. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of questions regarding, you know, what's special. Is there a special provisions, especially with working with, you know, school databases rather than, because I really don't know the structure of how, you know, who's going to be responsible when, let's say, I'm running a WordPress server right now and somebody was smart enough to put infringing material on my WordPress site. Usually, historically, at least for me, is that the invisible hand, i.e. one of my bosses, would just go in and either delete the post and write me a very, very angry email telling me to, you know, shape up. But, I mean, I got a slew of questions, and if I can just fire off a couple of them. Like, for example, is there any historic cases with this? I understand it vastly differs from state to state, school to school.
I think I can answer a lot of your questions with no. There just really is no difference. The DMCA is a federal law, so there's no difference state to state, other than what is generated by each state's court. Obviously, you know, the American legal system, you've got the law, the statute, but you also have all of the court-created precedent, but still, from a federal standpoint, everything's fair game for all the federal courts, whether it's binding or not. You can at least cite to it. So, your from state to state, school to school, the same general provisions ought to apply. And as far as whether there's any separate protection for academic servers as opposed to sales servers, no.
I work for a university, just so our faculty, so don't put infringing content on the
right.
I mean, the university is an ISP in the eyes of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
ISP. ISP is ISP is ISP. If you have a web-based content site where content can be posted by users, you are subject to this law. Now, the one place where academics does make a difference, though, is in the duty of the person to ensure that they are not that they are properly being infringed, because fair use is exactly what they were told to look for in that case. And mm-hmm. fair use in an academic setting has a much broader perspective than in a merchant setting or a sales setting. Obviously, if I'm selling your picture on a T-shirt, it's not as likely to be fair use, if ever at all, as it is if I am using your picture of a 57 Chevy to create an academic commentary on poetry of the 50s. So that's the distinction that might come down is in the analysis side of the person who wants to send the takedown. Mm-hmm. But from the actual DMCA protection and whether you get takedowns, respond to takedowns, get putbacks, respond to putbacks, absolutely no difference whatsoever.
Yeah, that goes large and small, you know, from people, you know, running a site there, from your reseller, you know, even academically, you know, on a campus, ideally, if you were the one responsible in some way for that material there, ideally, you should be getting not necessarily the takedown, but whomever received the takedown, if they felt that you were responsible, should let you know, unless they were just going to eat the whole thing and you really don't have the responsibility. You know, you're working for them and they felt they are taking it and they just, you know, then it's just boss to employee. But otherwise, if you're a student and say you had a site and it's exposed to the broader internet, and your school received a takedown, they really should be passing along something to you to let you know that things have been taken down, and you should ideally have a chance to put back. You know, you still have that legal right. Mm-hmm. So it, even for just to quickly go back to your web reseller thing, you might want to look at, you know, whomever you're reselling and see what they say, because you should. The best thing for you to protect you would be the people whom you sell to. You should tell them they need to have, you know, they need to file with the copyright office and have a DMCA contact listed and let you know where so you could double check it. And exactly. And that they should have a notice on their website of how to contact them, which is usually an email and at usually a street address. They don't have to have a phone number per se, but two ways helps, you know, prevent the AOL issue. Mm-hmm. You know, and so just for your best, this law does protect, you know, down to, you know, the individual, you know, and it's both when you're acting as an ISP, when you're the content owner, you know, you can send a takedown. You know, you don't have to have a lawyer to send the takedown. You can just go ahead and do this, and you can find information about that online.
Yeah, in fact, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I know Chilling Effects has the putback. But don't they have a takedown too?
I think that they do. I think that they work both sides of it. You know, to make it accessible, you don't have to have a lawyer to write this up for you. And we, you know, as
not that I encourage people to not hire a lawyer.
Yeah, don't let him be quoted saying that.
But no, he's absolutely right. I mean, these are not hardcore legal documents.
Yeah,
it's accessible.
And sometimes the owner of my company has told me that he's not really scared of RIA or the MPAA or all that so much, because that's all lawyer to lawyer. He's scared when somebody who produces content out of their home, say embroidery patterns, sends a takedown that isn't quite right and all that. They would rather walk that person getting it right and remove that, because that's a person who feels that their livelihood is on the line. And we'll take you to court, and they'll get in front of a jury, and you're going to be hurting. And this actually happened to one of our competitors, who they thought, we don't have to worry about this. You know, some lady here who's making these embroidery patterns. This isn't like MP3s or something. It's like, oh yeah, well, she could tune around, and now you're a contributory infringer. and now you're in trouble for this, and you've got a lot more money than whomever actually put it up there. Mm-hmm. You're juicier, you know. And forget them.
And
you
now that like sweet little grandma that you were ignoring is a,
that's right.
is a lot richer sweet little grandma.
That's right, and very angry about the whole thing. That was Harlan Ellison's whole thing, you know, about the e-books. He was on a mission. You know, he was a lot feistier than, you know, ALS was angry and they sell money, you know, but Harlan Ellison had a mission. He, yes, he does. And he was not going to let that go past, but, you know, we managed to, we settled on that.
The mic has disappeared.
Yeah, the mic, okay, we got somebody with the mic. They have the magic stick.
I run a care package program. And the way we work is we get GIs to set up a wish list of the stuff they want to receive, mainly Japanese animation. And I get volunteers to send stuff off those wish lists to them. So I'm probably not asking all the right questions. However, one of the things, you know, now I've said no bootlegs or pornographic stuff, obviously. But part of, like, to my understanding of the copyright laws, and that's not very much, is if you say you record something, you record a DVD onto a personal DVD of yours, and you don't sell it to anybody, you maybe give it to a friend or something.
Well, you have sort of two different questions there. And first off, let me just congratulate you for thinking you don't know everything about copyright. Because sadly, and I could walk out in the lobby out there and ask 100 people if they know about copyright, they'd tell me I know everything, and 99 of them would be wrong, because it's not that complicated, but there's enough nuances that people get. I hear lawyers get it wrong all the time. Boy, does that bother me. but because people hire them instead of me. but that's the, you know, that's the first step, is saying I don't know. Let me find this out. Mm-hmm. But if you say to a, you know, if you, your site has a list of items I'd like to receive. And I post a list that says, I'd love to have the following movies. You know, whether they're anime or Hollywood movies or whatever. I just put out a list. I want the Raiders of the Raiders of the Ark DVD. Raiders of the Ark.
Lost Ark.
How am I blocking out?
It's lost.
Close enough.
It's like a mental block there. I can't say it. But that one, let's just say Last Crusade. DVD. Well, it, as long as it doesn't come through you, and when you ship a care package, I mean, if they send it to you and you box it up and you send it on, and it's obviously got, you know, a photocopied label over a home burned DVD, then maybe there's a difference. But if you don't have any hands-on interaction other than the posting of the list and making it accessible for someone to say, oh, he wants that DVD, I'll send it to him. There's no harm to you if they send bootlegs. Is it illegal? Yeah, absolutely. Is there a problem for the guy who made it and maybe for the guy who receives it? Yeah, probably. But you're not involved in that loop. Now, if they come to you and you're the one putting them in a box, you're involved in the loop. You've got a very different scenario. To your second question of can you copy things at home, yes. You can make a copy of all of your DVDs. You can make really as many copies of all your DVDs as you want, so long as you keep them in your house.
Yeah,
and don't really do anything with them. You know,
yeah,
let's
it's literally a backup. You right. know, as opposed to if you've received something from Netflix, you should not make a backup for them.
Right.
Nobody does this. And the flip side of this, just to illustrate cases that have been going on, mm-hmm. this is when the RIAA is going after people who had content like Jamie. Can't remember who else. Yeah, Thomas, who had content on a peer-to-peer network, then she's not making any money off of this. So you can look at it in much the same way, that even though you're giving them a physical copy of this, it's not any you know, and you know them personally, you know, or in this case, you know, you don't know them personally, but, you know, you're trying to do good with it. She could not legally, and other people cannot legally share this content that they do not own the rights to, because even though, you know, there's, you can, you know, we could get into the arguments of whether or not there's harm and all of that, and it, that would be a whole nother panel, but that's really what it boils down to, is that it's the same thing in the eyes of the content holders, is that you're making a copy that somebody else did not purchase, and now there are two copies. It is no longer in the old thing, like a lot of old software would say, this can be used like a book. Mm-hmm. You know, that you can install it on your computer, and then you can install it on two computers, but you can only run it on one at a time. Just like, you know, I have a physical object here. I can be reading it, but TJ can't be reading it at the same time in a different location. So if they were to send, you know, the actual DVD that they owned and then expected to get it back, that's fine. They have lent the item, the actual right. physical item. But when they send a copy of it, then, and they maintain a copy themselves, or they send the original and maintain a copy, then it starts to, you know, you have duplicated copy, you have, you know, violated copyright law, technically, even though no money is being made off of it. You know, so, and that gets into the moral side of things.
The idea of making your own copies is, if you want, you don't want to bring your original DVD in the car with the kids. You don't want to bring your original CD to work. You might lose it. Who knows? You can make a copy for your own home use. Now, if you make one or two copies and share them with a friend, yes, it's illegal. Is anybody going to actually know about it? Who knows? I don't know. But once you start making 100 copies and sending them to friends, then there really is going to be a damages argument, because you're not making money off of it. But that's not the measure of whether there's been harm. Mm-hmm. That's one of the measures of what you have to pay me back. But the fact that you aren't making money off of it doesn't mean that I didn't lose money because of your actions. And whether you did or not is, again, an entirely separate thing.
Yeah, that's where the statutory damages come into play, mm-hmm. such as in the Jamie Thomas case, where I think that's what they're trying to go after, which that will be interesting to see how that comes mm-hmm. out. But that's, again, another panel.
Now, I do have another question on that. If, say, one of the volunteers and one of the GIs getting an email contact with each other without me involved, mm-hmm. And he puts a request for something that's not necessarily legal, how can that bite both me and the two of them legally?
I wouldn't say that it bound you myself, but I am not a lawyer, you know. He is, but, you know, I'll speak to this so that he doesn't have to say that that somebody could try and turn around and link you into it because you put them into contact, or if you touched the material as it came through. But if one of the GIs, you know, wrote to one of your volunteers and it was not just some random pool or, you know, posting on forums, but they sent an email then and asked for something, and then that person turned around and mailed it themselves to the GI, as far as I'm concerned, you're out of the loop. But who, you know, somebody else might decide that they want to go after your charitable organization and be, you know, and then we're back to the whole, you know, jackass thing.
Yeah, and you know, I think, again, in that situation, you're probably safe. You probably, because you're not involved. If it goes through your content, or if it goes through your shipping box, very different situation. I don't even know which direction we're going anymore.
He was saying,
yeah, I know.
After that, I have no idea.
I am in the process of developing and launching a textbook exchange website for college students because, well, books are way too expensive. And the question that I have is, when this thing launches, it's going to launch about the fall buyback time. I know that there are editions of textbooks out there, like international editions, that you can't resell. Well, I'm not going to handle any textbooks. I'm not going to have a clearinghouse that's going to put, you know, person A in contact with person B. They negotiate their price and their terms. If they are caught selling the international editions or the textbooks with no cover on them that they can't resell, am I in any way held liable for this?
I don't know. That's sort of outside of the DMCA.
Right. Yeah, it's not really in the bounds of the safe harbor. But at the same time, you know, I think the question comes down always to, do you know what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, if you basically set yourself up as you know, as the Pirate Bay of textbooks, you're gonna get sued. Yeah.
Think about eBay and fake Gucci bags. You know, that's sort of the angle that you'll be wanting to look into, I would think. And I mean, there's the, again, and that's sort of a trademark infringement type thing. And in this case, it's a violation of some sort of book license.
Right. It's not even. That's not even a copyright issue necessarily, because once you sell a book, the copyright, you have control over that book. You can resell it all you want under copyright terms, license terms, or international regulations. Are a different animal, but yeah, so. I mean, generally, I think your answer is be cautious and try not to let it become the main focus of your site.
Yeah, get some good legal verbiage up on your site saying why not to do that. You know that it's not allowed. At least you know that's the best CYA. And then don't be aware of it. Don't let it continue on. Like eBay, don't be eBay.
Actually, I'm really glad that you brought up the Trademark Act question, because I had a question along those lines. I know this is DMCA and not trademark, and so if I'm going outside the realm of what we're allowed to ask, please let me know. but we had actually a complaint with my hosting company last month, and you mentioned the fake Gucci bags. This was actually for fake Rolexes. And we got an email to us that was saying basically that we were doing everything from destroying the rainforest to promoting child labor from everything, because we allowed this site to go up, and it was included within a DMCA complaint. Now, it was pretty obvious to me that this was not DMCA. This did seem to me to be trademark infringement.
Right.
But when I looked at our customer's website, they actually go right up in the front and say, these are fake. These are not real. However, they kind of look like these ones. Now, would they actually have a case in that regard? I mean...
factually specific. From the facts you have given me, I'd say probably not. But that's... probably not. And of course, if someone hired me to say they did, then yes, absolutely. But no, the issue, to tie it into our DMCA talk, that there is no DMCA issue there. So if you receive a Digital Millennium Copyright Act takedown that says you've used my trademark, so
yeah.
But the flip side of that is that you also don't have the same safe harbor, because that act doesn't apply to trademarks.
Trademark's scarier.
Yeah. So it is, it still is something that you ought to take seriously. You ought to do exactly what you did and run in and say, are we doing something that can land us in liability? And that's really the concern you need to have. Mm-hmm. It's not, you want to have someone, either someone on your staff or have some legal counsel on speed dial who can advise you as to any possible exposure to trademark liability, because it's not the same thing. You're not necessarily using the trademark, but there's still contributory infringement in a trademark sense. So you want to make sure you're not crossing that line by allowing your user to post the content. It's better safe than sorry.
Yeah, a question there. I mean, it sounds like it was a bit of a rantish thing. Did that person actually claim to have, was it from Gucci?
Yeah, Rolex. They claimed that they were.
Oh, Rolex, yeah.
From Rolex, yeah.
Well, wow. And Rolex, of course, doesn't like people selling fake Rolexes.
Yeah.
They're not in favor of that. But the fake, these are fake, these are not real Rolexes, we are not in any way affiliated with Rolex. That's a pretty good defense. At the same time, there's also some law that says I can look at Daniel and say, oh, I like that Rolex you're wearing, and I don't know that he bought it off the site that is labeled fake all over and has the big red word fake written on the bottom of it. I only see the Rolex. And there is some case law that would say that can cause confusion and give rise to damages. That's why your client who's selling those fakes may still be subject to a trademark infringement suit. You just want to make sure that you're protected from that as well.
Federal?
Federal.
Yeah. There are state, unlike copyright though, there are state trademark statutes which can dramatically vary from state to state.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that the email got through if it mentioned fake Rolexes. They're lucky.
Going back for a second specifically to the DMCA, from the point of view of a content producer, someone who's actually doing the posting, if you are there any mitigating factors with other licenses you have may have issued in regards to your content? For instance, my band has a policy that all our music is free to everyone all the time, and it's under Creative Commons.
Mm-hmm.
If we find someone has made like a web video that's an advertisement, you know, does our Creative Commons mitigate the takedown procedure?
Well, the Creative Commons, depending on how you put it, I mean, if you really say that it's for everybody to use in any way, including commercially.
I forget which one
depending
it is not commercially viable.
Otherwise, you have a license, and I don't know if there's case law regarding the Creative Commons licenses or if anybody has actually gone and tried this, but the idea is that you have now licensed your work, which technically you licensed it. It's almost even a worse thing if they say that this is an invalid license because your work is copyrighted as soon as you produced it and it went into a hard form, you know, into a reproducible form there, you know, either when it was recorded or, you know, if it, you know, scored, then it has copyright then. Now, if they say that the Creative Commons license, if it has a no commercial use license there, if they can't really have it both ways, they can't say you've given up all your rights and but you can't keep that, I wouldn't think. Instead, they would have to, if they want to wipe away that, it would seem to revert back to the fact that you have copyright over material you have done. Now, are you
I'm
saying,
sorry, I may have phrased my question badly.
Are you saying that then if someone sends a takedown...
I find that one of our songs is being used in an advertisement. We have the non-commercial use license.
Uh-huh.
And I send a takedown to whatever ISP. Can that stop at the level of the ISP and for them shoot back and go, no, this is a Creative Commons issue, or is the ISP got to take it down?
They have to take it down.
They have to take it down. If you have a no-commercial use license, it goes up, it's being used commercially. It's outside the license. That's infringing,
and that is copyright. Yeah.
If you have a completely blanket, I give everybody everything. I'm keeping none of my rights. License to the world. Do whatever you want. And then you send takedown notices. I still have to comply. I still have to take down. I still have to remove the content until I get a putback.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to get a putback that includes a copy of your license saying I clearly have the right to use this.
Yeah, the other side of it is that you don't have to say this is under a Creative Commons license. You just say, under penalty of perjury, I have, you know, rights on this, and, you know, so be it. You don't have to say, you know, what those rights are because the default right is that you had copyright anyway.
Right.
You know, so that because Creative Commons isn't going to erode it at that level of sending the takedown, but like you said, you know, the putback, it could.
Yeah.
And one actual, just to throw something in here, if he wanted to then regain rights to a work that has been put out there completely, would he basically have to re-record that song, basically make a new form of it and under a new license?
I think he could change the license. And it would be up to the person proving that they gained a copy that had the old license.
Yeah, that would be the challenge. I guess different panel. Lots to think about.
The year flipped over. If they have one that has the new year, you can show that you cease using that license before that date.
Yeah, I mean the problem is a new work.
Yeah, exactly. I think the new work would be a sure thing because you could re-license that. With an older one, though, you've got one of these older licenses, and it says it's free for everybody.
Right.
So that means you could put it up on your website.
And that's really going to be the problem. Is there was that licensed work that's out there, and everybody had it, and everybody had access to it. Now, it's going to be. I mean, you can't really call them all back.
Yeah.
You can say I've decided to stop licensing. Because if I decide to stop licensing to someone who's paying me for a license, that's an easy process to stop. There's only a few of them.
Yeah.
And it's...
And but it probably reverts yearly. Or, right, you know, it has to be.
If I license it to the world, how on earth am I going to call back every copy that someone might have out there? And that's...
But in your case, I mean, if you saw somebody doing this, you could definitely send a takedown.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, with those caveats. So.
Regarding the gentleman that was sitting next to me, he said that if somebody on person A on his website requests for a movie, and person B sends him a copyright infringing copy of the movie, it doesn't touch his hands, so he's not necessarily liable for it. correct?
I didn't say the word necessarily. He's not liable for it.
Okay, he's not liable.
If you say out loud in the room, I want a copy of
law.
Yeah, that's fine. Then, you know, Daniel hears it and he sends you a copy. I have no liability because
Scott
I had no control over it.
Yeah.
Scott has no liability even though it's his forum because he had no control over what Daniel sent you. Yeah. Now, if Daniel hands it to me or hands it to Scott and says, please mail it to you, then his hands are on it. He knows what's being sent, and he knows it is being sent.
But as long as his hands are
no
off,
knowledge otherwise.
His hands are off, so he's not liable.
Yeah, right. If his hands are off and is not aware of this, he is if he's not assisting in this in any way, you know, if he's not letting this go by on his, if he had forums and people started to request things and fill requests there,
right.
That starts to get dodgy, and that's actually a whole other issue is, you know, can you send a takedown if somebody's requesting the material?
Right.
Which we have had, and we really don't know what to do except for CYA and shield ourselves and... I don't think that there's case law for that.
I would say that, a request for the content isn't, there's no copyright.
Yeah, there's no copyright,
but are you smarter to take it down?
Yeah, the copyright owner always feels differently about that.
So. You have probably in your terms of service about what is appropriate.
Exactly.
Right.
How you would...
Yeah, that would be inappropriate. So ideally, you wouldn't allow that in any case. But if he's totally hands off, you know, if there's deniability there, then that's good. But then there are cases where, you know, technically Napster claimed, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people have claimed deniability through there. And his case is also different because he's actually moving physical items instead of, you know, so that's sort of a little bit. That starts to fuzz away from the DMCA. It's still copyright, but it's different from...
The question, that was the recap. The question is dealing, you mentioned the Pirate Bay earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're hands off. Like, their torrent points towards it, but they don't necessarily touch it. Now, how does that...
The distinction comes into what the definition of contributory infringement is. Well, contributory infringement is not necessarily I'm involved in the supply chain, although Pirate Bay certainly is that too. It's that I am making or encouraging or facilitating the infringement. I'm not creating the infringing content. I'm not receiving the infringing content. That's copyright infringement. Contributory infringement is when I'm making it easier for you to infringe, or when I'm providing some encouragement for you to infringe. And again, I think we can probably all guess that Pirate Bay encouraged certain behaviors that came back to bite them.
And I think that there were also issues that, through the rampant lobbying, the RIA and so forth, managed to get some laws changed or passed, you know, there that made them get in trouble. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, when we, back at Super News, we had customers who were in Denmark and so forth, and they would generally, you know, it's like, well, we have to send you this. We are in America. We have to comply with this. We have to take it down, even though you don't feel this applies to you. You know, we're not going to go into conventions or any of that, you know, that might make this apply to you, but it applies to us. So you have to tell us if you want us to allow you to post again after one strike here, if you want to be able to put content up anymore, you still have to play along and say, no, I won't do this again. And some of the ISPs were like, but my user says that he does not believe that this applies to him. It's like, well, we can't help that. You know, we're in a bind here.
Right.
He's just, all we want him to do is say he won't do it, and we really want him to also not do it because it puts us in a bind, you know. So, and they had to play along with it. So there, you know, it does, with going the internet being borderless effectively, there are issues. But yeah, they were, you know, I think that there were some local laws that got passed that made the original. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So money buys everything.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. Obviously, the laws are passed in case the case comes out poorly. You want to cover all your bases. But I mean, the Pirate Bay issue was pure contributory infringement. Just was, as was Napster, as was Grokster, as was everything else. Now, everyone gets to say.
Belligerently, they have threads and posts about how these people send them emails
So,
one of the things you talked about early on, and this is to the lady with the long dark hair over there, reasonable time. Something's posted, reasonable time, how long? Knowing courts, that's, if it's a picture of my 57 Chevy, a reasonable time may be a week. If it's a picture of the tornado that hit Atlanta that the guy put up on his website and the AJC put it on their website, and he had it down in like an hour. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the AJC. So wow. What the content is, I would think, would make a big difference.
Not necessarily. I mean, what where that argument would come in is how much harm you're suffered. Mm-hmm. You know, the obviously an immediacy issue on a breaking news item is going to be much more. You know, there's a lot more damage that can occur in a short period of time than taking down a picture of a 57 Chevy. I mean, unless your wife really is selling 400 shirts a day, like I made up earlier, and if she is,
yeah,
woohoo! But, yeah. You know, the likelihood is that being down for an hour or 2 days is not going to cause significantly meaningful harm. Mm-hmm. But an hour's worth of infringement for breaking news issues could be considerably different. Mm-hmm. So that's where that argument comes in. Now, the reasonable time for put down and, excuse me, take down and put back. Is there something in the air up here? My brain is shutting down.
Yeah, put down.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, put down to what Pirate Bay sent back.
That's right. the reasonable time element would more apply to what is required in the steps. I mean, if I could go into the court and legitimately say in my defense, yes, I didn't take it down for 2 weeks, but look at what I've got to go through to get a takedown, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, the company that does have a on and off switch for content and someone manning the switch and can get it down in an hour. Mm-hmm. If they take 2 weeks to get it down, there's going to be a very different analysis than if I've got to really go through dozens of flaming hoops to get that content taken down.
Yeah.
The reasonable time goes to what you have to do to get it done. But there's still going to be a point where beyond it doesn't take that long. Mm-hmm. You're liable. And the reality that we all need to take away from the discussion that I'm having here is that I said it's the defense you make when you're before the judge. You don't want to be there in the first place. You don't want to have to justify your actions to the court. So you're better off just working diligently to comply. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say that, you know, really it's so much more in your best interest to mm-hmm. stick to the letter of the law and try and make things as easy for your clients to give you a putback than to try to be nice and give them the benefit of the doubt. Because the benefit of the doubt only costs you money, and it puts liability back where you don't need or want it to be.
Yeah. A couple of quick things here. Was this something that the AJC themselves had posted, or was it something that somebody posted to their forums?
He's a photographer. He had put it up on his own website. It was the high-res version. They went out, got the high-res version,
so,
and stuck it on the front of the AJC.
Okay. So, okay. In that case, yeah, then they. I think that part of that, the alacrity at which it would be removed would also be because they could easily, this photographer, for one thing, I think he has a certain amount of time after he has published the work himself in which he can file to have it a registered copyright and thus get the statutory infringement, mm-hmm. which is where you get the big bucks. Mm-hmm. The other side is that he could make the argument that they are making money off of this that by using his picture, and they've got weblogs, he can quantify how many people saw this and what they made, and so getting it down quickly is probably, you know, useful for them.
Right.
You know, it's good that they had a process that got it down quickly. Well, but those are the two things for that.
Well, the other thing too is to remember that as I said, the benefit of the sorry, the benefit of the safe harbor is because we assume you didn't know it was there.
Mm-hmm.
If you put it there,
yeah, that's also bad.
You're not subject to the safe harbor. You're an infringer. Mm-hmm. That's not contributory infringement anymore. That's the AJC stealing his picture.
Yeah.
So they acted very promptly to remedy the theft rather than to comply with the takedown.
That's the other thing to point out, is if somebody had posted it to their forums, say, some third party had, and they took it down, that third party could still be sued by the copyright owner. And in this case, AJC could still be sued, or at least, you know, he could grumble at them, and they would probably do right to settle as soon as they could on this. And just one other interesting thing is, because it's a news item, if they had copied his article and reworded it, then that actually gets into different laws about how news items about breaking news can be distributed. But because it was a picture, that's going to be different.
Right.
So, there. Okay. Quick and away.
She's got the mic.
Yeah.
I know one of the parts of the DMCA is that every 3 years they have these hearings to include different exceptions of fair use.
Mm-hmm.
There were some that were earlier this year, and I think it was May. What came out of those, and do we have any new exceptions or new decisions that came out of that?
No idea myself. I read that they were doing it. I read that it was closing. I read encouragements to send things in. I didn't send anything in and myself, and I have not gone back to look to see if anything came out of it.
I have not either.
I think that they were specifically looking for things related to net radio. I mean, because I guess that was more about the...
the royalties.
Yeah, royalties, but I thought that would somehow played into it. So, but I don't know the specifics there. I think they'd probably be, it should be out there to be able to look up. Assuming they've gone through the full process by now. I mean, this is a government.
Yeah, so. I was looking for it, and I did not hear anything of any decisions or any exceptions that came out of it.
Most of it, I mean, obviously, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is not breaking headline news in anyone's front.
Yeah.
Especially with other legislation taking up the front page of the newspaper. So, you know, and frankly, it's not something that anyone knows till it becomes an issue. Really the answer there. We appear to be being invaded, and I think we're
I think that we're
close to being out of time. Yeah. So maybe one or two more.
Let's go ahead and wrap it up.
And do one more here and wrap up.
You mentioned earlier making copies of DVDs for personal use or format shifting. Is that legal now, with even if the DVD is encrypted and you have to circumvent the copy protection mechanism?
That's a very different question.
There is a
home use exception. There has been codification of certain elements of home use recording. But, you know, again, it comes down to a practical analysis. No one's going to sue you for putting
putting
a copy of a DVD in your car so your kids can watch it. But there's a world of difference between can I copy the copyrighted work and can I bypass the copyright protections?
Yeah.
Can I bypass the encryption mechanisms? Because that's a completely different area
side,
of law.
Yeah, that's a different side of the DMCA. We're more safe harbor.
Right.
Yeah. Can we get maybe one more?
Was there somebody else?
Yeah, right. He thought of his question.
taking that one step further, if you want to create a media server, I'm not sure how much you're familiar with AV and computing.
Uh-huh.
There's a company called Kaleidoscape. My boss, who knows a lot about technology, and he's high up in our company, he says they're probably not going to be in business doing what they do next year for what they do now, because I think part of they're stepping on toes, or they're breaking the law, because they have the media server that bypasses the encryption and does all this other stuff. And I mean, you just load your disks on there, and then it puts it on there, and then you can access it however you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without the disks being in a carousel or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
It copies the content over and decrypts it. I don't know. I would almost argue that they could stream, you know, if they were, you know, if they had a DVD decryption license at whatever, DCSS, I forget, and they were doing the decryption on a device there, and they had the encrypted form of it, and so they were decrypting it on the fly, but that's just totally hazarding a guess as to how they might be able to work it out. But yeah, it sounds like something where they're likely to get a letter real soon as they get on the radar.
They've been in court for a while.
Well, there you go.
We're coming out with...
It sounds familiar. I mean...
That's going to be the issue is, even where there's no answer, and especially where there's no clear answer as to whether it's allowed or not, you're going to court. And really, unless you've got the money and a real desire to create law, you don't want to be in court. So,
yeah.
Well, we're coming out with a similar product sometime soon, and I think what we're going to have to do to comply is have the disc in the device for it to play, which kind of
defeats
the whole point of a media server on a hard drive.
That's safer, but you're right. Well, I mean, at the same time,
the other side, a lot of places now allow you to download, when you buy a DVD, they'll give you an electronic version of it, which is, you know, very forward-thinking, but that's not going to help you for your older content, which, of course, they'd be happy to sell you again.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah, basically, to sum up what you guys started out with at the beginning, the DMCA, from the point of view of an ISP, I work at a university like you do, awesome. I mean, it really... we were sweating it because it's not
exactly.
Like students never put up copyright
students infringe.
However, on the other hand, there's things about it that we everybody on the other hand, all of us in IT kind of look at it and go, what were they thinking? They said any tool that could be used, didn't say is used, could be used to decrypt. Well, the way the disk is made, if you take a felt tip and draw a black line around the outside edge and put it in your reader, it can't read the code. It says, oh, it's not encrypted, and just plays it. We're going to outlaw all felt tip pens. So, yeah, there's people looking at this saying, this is crazy. What were they thinking? So, on one hand, we're kind of glad. On the other hand, we're not. And but the safe harbor
side. The safe harbor side, really, from the ISP's point of view, it does not make us a copyright cops. And it frees us. It gives us a structure in which to work instead of before, where it was anybody who wanted to come gunning for us for money, you know, could have and claim that, oh, well, you're a contributory infringer. Mm-hmm. And nobody really knew what that meant in this context. And so the DMCA gave us context. It gave us a protocol. And, you know, we're tech people. We like these protocols. You know, we get a thing, we pass it back, we pass it. Yeah, hey, we could do this. So
yeah, and we'll no longer have to investigate. That was the other thing.
Right.
They would say, you got to give us all the evidence so we can go prosecute that guy. And we're like, but I have real work to do. Now we don't have to do that.
Yeah, that's the other side of this. Just to throw it out there, is that the DMC, a takedown does not give them a right to that information about who posted it. The ISP is the middleman. They tell that person, and they deal with them from there. If that third party, if the copyright holder wants that person's information, that's a whole other subpoena process there after the takedown. Now, if they send a putback, you are, like I said before, you're anteing up your information. You have now put your information into the pot to say, you know, I'm this sure of it, you know, bring it, you know, you could sue me now, and you know exactly who I am. You know, you have yourself revealed that information. But your ISP, the DMCA doesn't require that. That's something, just to put that out there in case anybody's concerned, had any questions about that. I'm not sure. Subpoena, you know, what we would receive. I had to deal with them from law enforcement or from, you know, they had to go through the courts and get a judge to agree that there's enough of a case here to subpoena the information. And then, you know, we would look and see if it's valid. Our lawyers might, I forget who it was, this Earthlink, somebody had a really good rep for fighting these. Mm-hmm. Verizon? Yeah, I think Verizon, for their users for a while, for their ISP users, would tended to fight this. And it's sort of, you know, gone, but this is no longer in the news. This was on the order of 3 years ago that they, you know, it really made an impression with me that it's like, wow, they're doing this? Why? It's like, it's a subpoena, you know, but they were fighting these. They did not want to hand over the information. So.
Well, thank you all for coming, and stick around for the next session.
And thank you.
Thank our speakers.
I did see a lot of hands go up. I'm not sure we got everybody's questions or anything, but if you want to talk, I've got a card. We'll be available.
We'll be over here. So.